Labor Day has come and gone, which means that you have about one more month of nice weather left to finish up your outdoor projects. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. If you're thinking about painting the house before the snow flies, what's the best way to clean it and prepare it? Before the ground freezes, what can you do to prepare your driveway, sidewalk, or deck to prevent damage from the freeze and thaw cycle? Bill will answer those questions, and of course he'll also answer whatever questions you have about the projects you're working on. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Home Improvement Day with Bill McAnally. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement and energy efficiency expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He's ready to answer any of your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill, clearly you think Twitter is funny.
That stuff I don't get at all, because after the show today, Dennis Reese and Rob Diller and I we're going out getting all new clothing because we got to get into this new preppy look, I guess.
Right. Preppy is back. I've heard that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it might be back. I don't know where, but
I'm getting the impression that your philosophy is if you can't hit it with a hammer, you shouldn't.
No, and if you can't comb your hair with your fingers, then there's something wrong.
All right. Well, Bill, it is past Labor Day. We've got about another month of absolutely beautiful weather for working on outdoor projects. And one of the things you've been thinking about is getting houses ready for paint.
Yeah.
So what do you need to do if you have a house that you need to get the old paint scraped off of?
You know, the best way still is to hand clean.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah,
you know, I love pressure washers too, but I really like pressure washers because it gets things cleaned very fast. But the last thing that, especially now you're feeling that crunch, you want to get out there like today and get some paint put on, you know, and we want to clean it fast. So we get out a pressure washer, have somebody come over and just clean it off, and we forget about how much water is coming out the end of that wand and then where it's going. For one thing, that drives that water through the wood or into the wood, but a lot of times it'll just go right into the seams, and that the sun will come out later on and dry. Somebody will say, oh, you can paint it in a couple of days. Well, you might as well just be, you know, put a piece of wood in the sink for a couple of days and then try to paint it and get it to hang on. You'll get the surface, you know, tore up, and sometimes maybe too much. You might be blowing some lead paint off, which if the house, you know, has paint from pre-1978 or so, you'll want to get it tested for lead. But, you know, then you've got lead chips all over the place. But the amount of water that gets driven behind that siding and then into the wood, that's the bad part. I know it's fast and I know it's easy, but where does that water go? Well, it either stays in the wood for a long time and the sun dries it out, which may take weeks and weeks. Well, then we're past our painting season, or it drives it behind the siding, and that's the last place we want to have it, because then we start getting mildew, we start getting rot. Sometimes you'll see those really cool stain lines that come from the nails, because now the nail's so rusty that now you have these long lines coming down after you've painted. It's still best to, you know, to go to your you know, your paint supplier and get, you know, ask them, okay, I want to do this correctly. So what cleaning product am I going to use? What kind of a brush am I going to need? It's going to take time. You're going to be sanding, you know, if this is wood. Now, if it's vinyl, you know, you can clean vinyl with a pressure washer, but you've got to stay way back. Yeah, I mean, you can apply a cleaner and then use a long extension pole and kind of with a brush and scrub it. But there again, when you look at vinyl siding, aluminum siding, you'll notice on the bottom there's these little holes. And that's because condensation always occurs on the backside of these products, and then it allows it to, you know, fall out and then drain out the bottom. Well, if you're shooting upwards, you're blowing water into those holes, you get a tremendous amount of water, and if there's not a consistent drainage plane, which would be like felt paper or house wrap, something like Tyvek, for that water to drain behind the siding, you're driving it maybe right into the wood. You're driving it into around your windows. It's amazing how many people get water on the inside of their window when they pressure wash the outside. You know, it's just some spots that have holes. So you've got to just stand way back and use the proper tip on that. Don't use the one that, you know, you can etch your name out in your driveway with. Use one that's more of a mist. But really take your time. I know that Labor Day's passed, and we want to get these things done, but we still have to kind of think about it being that a nice, gentle touch to the siding.
So if I were going to paint a wood house in, say, June,
sure,
and I wanted to pressure wash it and give it a few weeks to rest and dry,
yeah,
would that be okay?
Yeah, you know, that, and then you want to check that wood for moisture content. There's some fairly inexpensive moisture meters out now. If not, most building contractors have them. It's just a couple little prongs you stick into the wood, and it'll tell you what the moisture content of that wood is. You know, if it's down there 15% or so, it's great. If it pegs this meter out, well, no, I better wait. And it also depends on what side of the house that you're on. You know, if it's in a shady area, you know, if you've already got mildew growing on your siding right now, you know, sure as shooting that there's no really drying capacity there. So there you may have to do that by hand and not use a pressure washer. It's kind of a tricky, it's a tricky mechanism there that
you really have
with
to fight the allure of the pressure washer.
Oh man, yeah, because you just get, you know, once you get it started up, like once I get mine going, I just, you know, the only time I shut it down is when the gas is out. They're fun. What else can I hit?
All right. If you have any questions for Bill about pressure washing or anything else, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kathy is on the line in Denison. Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
Good morning.
My daughter lives in an apartment, and she has small children, and her bathroom door has a small hole. I think it's only like an inch in diameter. It's not very big. And she was wanting to know how to patch that so her landlord would be happy. And I thought, well, hey, since today is this talk show, I could find out for her.
Well, how that hole got there, or?
Well, with...
Oh, well, let's not get into that. I mean, sometimes it's a...
children, sure they had something and they poked in there.
I was just thinking, sometimes it's a landlord's responsibility to fix things like that. That's what I was getting at. You know, little kids with drills, that's not a good thing. You know, what you can do is there's different wood products, basically like putties, that you make. It's a powder and you mix it up. That they're available at lumber yards and hardware stores. But, you know, if it's a perfectly round hole, there's wood dowels that you can also put in there. But normally in your case, it's just as easy to probably go ahead and get a heavy-bodied wood filler for that. And you may have to do a couple applications and then sand it off and then paint.
But the door is hollow, so how does it?
Oh, well, yeah, there you go. What we've done in the past before is, you know, that spray foam. Have you seen, you know, little small cans of spray foam?
Is you can, like, insulation? Or?
Yeah, yeah, you can. Those hollow core doors, you know, they only have wood about, oh, say, an inch and a half in from all the edges,
And
so you can spray that in on the inside. And once that hardens, then you can go ahead and put a face putty over the top of that.
Okay, and then you can sand it smooth and then paint it the color of the door.
Yeah, I know some people that just use the foam and then sand the foam off, and that doesn't look so hot. So, you know, kind of once it gets hard, sand it back a little, and you use the wood putty to get a real nice sandable finish.
That sounds really easy.
Well, there you go. See? That. Boy, thank you. Sounds easy. Just don't use too much foam because, you know, it's really tough to clean up. Now, there are some latex spray foams that are in stores now. So check for that because most of the spray foams we have are more of an oil base. And, boy, when that gets on the floor or your hands or anything, it's real sticky.
Okay.
But there's a couple that are out now that are sitting on the shelves that are more of a latex, so there's water cleanup.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Good luck, Kathy, and don't let the kids help with that project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here, spray this for me.
Right. Have a great day. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, we have Kay in Johnston. Hello, Kay.
I'm on the phone. Hi, good morning. My question concerns my basement. I had some seepage during the heavy rains early in August here in Johnston.
Okay.
And water around the edge. Got that pretty well cleaned up and dried up, but I am noticing some mold smell.
Okay.
And also, I have a sump pump. I have a lot of fairly good drainage in my yard, but my sump pump rarely works, but I'm not sure it's working like it should.
Okay. Okay. What you can do there is unplug the sump pump.
Uh-huh.
And look down into the pit and see where the water comes into that sump pit. A lot of them pits were either old, kind of a concrete tile. Mm-hmm. Some are plastic, and the holes where the water comes in around those pits sometimes get plugged.
And I think that's probably true.
Well, what you can do is just take a hanger. My wife doesn't let me use those because, you know, you can't. It's no good sense to ruin a good hanger. So you can take, you know, if I were you, I'd take a hanger and jab that, or a pencil or a small diameter tool, screwdriver, into those holes. And a lot of times you just get some of that sediment away so the water can flow in better. How old is the house?
About 30, almost 30 years old.
30 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, back then we were still, well, 30 years. The tile may be starting to fill up. Some of the tile that goes around the foundation, it might be filling up with sediment. You know, that might be part of the issue too.
How is that dealt with?
Well, there are some companies that will come in and they have a flexible tip and they can power wash that out, pressure wash it. Boy, we got right back to pressure washing again. You know, some plumbers have that equipment. It's just like cleaning pipes out. If not, you may have to, dig around the foundation. But it doesn't sound like you have, you know, that big of an issue right now. But, you know, I would clean the pit first and, get all those holes cleaned out and do that first. And then, you know, just go outside and make sure there's not some, some pooling areas of the soil. You know, like you said, it sounds like your landscaping's okay. But it might be sneaking in some cracks or something.
Okay.
You know, that's what I would do. For people that are having consistent problems with moisture, Iowa State Extension has an answer line for their issues like this. It's 1-800-262-3804, and that's a number that can be called. And also, if you just want to Google Iowa State Extension disaster recovery, that takes you to the website. And there's a lot of these questions, and the more questions that come in, the more that we can answer. There we go. Hey, but we can get to these questions and answer them and get right back to people.
All right, Kay, thank you so much for your call. I'm talking with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert today, and he's here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're talking about home improvement today. Our expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, ready to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before the break, we were talking with Kay from Johnston about the moisture and mold in her basement. We got done talking about the sump pump and the moisture, Bill, but we didn't talk about the mold at all. So if she has mold in her basement, what does she need to do to clean that up?
Well, it depends how much there is, but even a small amount, you want to protect yourself. So you want to have on, you know, like rubber gloves, a set of goggles or glasses, and an N95 respirator. An N95 respirator looks just like the dust mask, but it has a little, you know, little dealy bobs on the sides. There is the best way to say it.
But going the technical,
yeah, it's a technical. You know, you get that for the big bucks here. Yeah, that's that N95. So to go in and ask for that, because it's really funny how different people are affected by mold. Some people, you know, I can walk into a room that it looks like carpet and it doesn't bother me, you know, on the walls. But other people, they just get that slight smell. And that's usually the best detector. Like she said, she could smell it because there's nowhere in Iowa that you can't get a positive on a mold test. You just go out in the parking lot, open it up, shut it. You get a positive. So it's just everybody's, you know, sensitivities. So what she wants to do is first make sure that she's stopped what's causing it, you know, or tried to. And it sounds like, you know, hopefully we're on the road to that. But then, you know, clean it with, you know, with soap and water and use a light brushing on that. Don't soak the material, especially like drywall or something like that. But if you're doing the concrete, hit it with a bristle brush soap and water, clean it up, get it very, very, very dry, and then is when you want to disinfect it. You know, probably 10 years ago, we thought that bleach was the magic killer. All we had to do was just hit it with bleach, you know, before we would even clean it and think, well, we've killed it, and now it's gone. Well, if you haven't stopped it, the moisture from coming in, it's just going to keep reoccurring. Doesn't matter how much you clean or how much you disinfect it. So after you've really cleaned that, what you want to do is just use like a 10% bleach to water solution and mist it and then rub it on and let it dry. And now probably in 2 weeks there's going to be a new way to do this, but I would go with that standard method. So that's basically 1.5 cups of bleach per gallon.
Okay. Don is on the line from Iowa City with a mold problem. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about this. Okay. Hello, Don.
Hi.
Hi.
The mold on my house is on the outside, and we repainted about 4 years ago, and there was mold. We have a 2.5-foot overhang, and there was mold all along there. And so we had some painter come, and he used Clorox, and then we kind of went over that again with this other solution in Clorox.
Sure.
And put anti-mold stuff in the paint itself, and it keeps coming back.
Is it, but it's still under the overhang?
In some parts, it's under the overhang, and now it's kind of occurring around the front door, which, as far as I know, it never used to do that.
Well, you know, it's there may be some moisture coming from inside.
Uh-huh.
I worked on a house a few years ago that in the middle of the winter, you're standing outside and there was mold on the outside of the house because there was a laundry on the inside without a ventilation fan. And whenever they'd run the dryer, they had it kind of running into their room too. And all the moisture went through the wall and then came out, you know, the surface of the siding. And then had mold issues because the wood was so saturated. Is that on the wall of a bathroom or laundry?
No, it's the front door.
I mean, where it was before though, in the overhang area?
No, it was all over the house.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
it reoccurred, you know, this year quite badly again in the back of the house, and there would be no moisture issues there that, you know, that I can see at all.
Okay. I would get the painter back and bring out the painting. They can usually bring the manufacturer out because the one with the mildew side, there's got to be something going on, and it could be environmental on the outside. It might be what can happen is if there's a lot of spores in the air, it'll blow and it'll attach to the siding, and then the mold grows on what's attached to your siding. And it has nothing to do with the paint or anything else. It's just stuff that's in the air that's being, you know, wind-driven. It sticks, you know, even dirt. And then the mold will start growing. It really depends on the situation. So the painter, they'll be able to come out and take a look at that, hopefully. I'd get them to look at it because if that was kind of more of a mildew side, like a Zinser a product, that's a brand name that they're really big in making kind of more of a mildew side type paint. If that's the product, then there's something going on there. And if it's environmental, we need to find out what it is.
Okay.
I don't know if that helped you much, but I would get them back again and take a look at it.
Yeah, well, we ended up doing the painting ourselves.
Okay. Well,
we hired somebody to come and scrape and then...
Oh, good.
And then, I mean, we used every product known to man, at least we thought we did, you know, to kind of stop it. But
well,
so maybe it's just something we're going to have to just keep dealing with, but which is okay, except that it's really hard to, you know, it's kind of... gruesome to use all that Clorox and stuff.
It is, and that's not really a case where you'd really want to. You'd want to get more of a mildew. You know, it's more of a mildew what you have there. It's more of a mildew side wash. More, it's a little more gentle than that 1.5 per gallon. And try that wash. And you, you'd probably want to, you know, hand apply that, you know, like from a distance, like with a long brush, and then you can gently
not
wash it.
Not a power washer.
No. I probably would when I go home. Forget what I said. I'm busy. try that. But I would, you know, get a hold of the manufacturer and ask them. You know, they might help you out too.
Well, good luck with that, Don.
Thanks
a lot.
Anything to stop physical labor, you know.
But it's obviously this is a recurring problem for her. What kinds of problems could this cause for either the house or for them to have this mildew? It's not inside the house; it's on the outside.
On the outside, and the thing is, you know, we put thousands and thousands of dollars into a house to make it look good from basically that curb appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, especially if she ever wanted to sell it, and of course they'd check with the neighbors. Geez, that house has always had this stuff growing, and then, you know, I mean, you want to have a reason, and so. You know, not seeing the house, it's hard to say. Maybe, you know, there's different types of trees. Here's where you need Jim Peace. There's different types of trees that cause, you know, when they fly through the air, you know, the pollens and all this stuff. And I'm not a biologist. That's why you need him here. But they go through the air and then they'll attach. I'm in the Des Moines River Valley, and, you know, I'll get on a gravel road. And so I'll get, you know, like this sheen of dust or dirt sometimes till the rain washes it off. Well, if you've got that dirt covering and it gets wet and it stays moist, it's in the shade, and then you can just get this surface mildew growing. It's just like where that one person had it on the outside, and it's just there all the time.
Mm-hmm. So it's more an aesthetic problem than a
yeah. That's basically all. And I'm not sure if she has wood, vinyl, or, you know, steel. No, I wouldn't be worried about it that way.
Okay.
You know, as long as you're not, you know, drinking the water that comes off the siding or something.
Well, I think that's not a good idea, no matter have on your house. It's not a professional opinion, but it's the opinion of a mother. The number to call if you have a question is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have Carol on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Carol. Oh, I'm sorry. Hello, Carol.
Hi.
What was your question today?
Well, my question is about a sump pump also. I have PVC pipes that are attached in my backyard, and now I'm thinking about burying that PVC pipe and carrying it to my front yard. I'm not sure if that's a good idea or if I should just simply lay it on the ground and still run it to the front yard. I would have to take this pipe fairly close, within a couple feet of a Japanese maple, under one fence, which is doable, but I'm also concerned because I have a lot of big trees in my yard, in my neighborhood, and I don't want cracking to occur over time and roots to get into that PVC. So would it be better to just leave it on top and run it to the street permanently, or bury it, or just leave it going into the backyard?
Well, I know in our community we can't run it to the street because if it goes into the gutter system, well, you know, your curb and gutter system, that it grows kind of this slimy algae, and people have slipped. So we can't do that. We have to tie it directly into our storm sewer system.
Well, I talked to the public works there, and he said as long as it doesn't create, like you say, the algae cover,
mm-hmm.
or if it doesn't run in the wintertime and create ice, which mine I don't think does. It's pretty tied to when it's extremely wet,
okay.
So it doesn't like run all the time.
Okay, yeah. The only issues we've ever had it here in Iowa is just that kind of interim time. It's best to bury it and get it out of the way and put a small piece of like hardware cloth over the edge so critters don't crawl up and either get into your sump pit or crawl into the pipe and die and plug it. It's that interim period, like what you're saying, is in the spring. We might get a big rain when the ground is still frozen and the ground's kind of pulled away from the foundation because of the frost, and it'll drop right down and your sump pump's supposed to work. Well, it can't because mm-hmm. the line's frozen. So what a lot of people will do is go ahead and put kind of a relief system so you can either run it through the underground or run it over the top with one.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so that you have kind of a valve system that you can shut the valve so it doesn't go out, the one that's buried under the ground just a little ways in case the ground is still frozen.
Oh, so you would install that at the site of the sump pump?
Well, right where the two come out or go out the house, where one goes out of the wall and you can shut it, right by the sump pump. But normally, you know, it's going to be running probably downhill, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's a pretty good drop.
Well, so I wouldn't worry about it then in your case, because it's gonna self drain by it. You know, even with the ground frozen, it is gonna self drain.
So you think it would be better to bury it rather than, because I used to have Orangeburg pipe and tree roots got into it and broke it up, so I had to have that replaced.
Yeah.
So I don't want this PVC to crack and get roots in it.
No, just use a PVC like the a sewer pipe type. You know. An AD, not
and that
ADS,
should stand up to tree
one.
Roots.
Yeah, that old stuff. Yeah, everybody's having nightmares with that. But just stick with a PVC drainage pipe, sewer pipe.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Brian's on the line from Dubuque. Hello, Brian. Hi,
morning.
Brian.
Oh, hang on.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, this is Bill. How you doing?
Good to talk to you. Hey, a question I was wondering is about asbestos on the siding.
Is asbestos?
Yeah, we have an old house that has, you know, slate siding on it, and worried about,
you mean whether it's slate or whether it's asbestos siding?
Yeah, because there's a lot of talk about that, and I'm not really sure if it is or not.
Well, you know, when you're looking at it, usually what in our area, it's about maybe 8 inches wide and it has vertical grooves in it. Or it's about 8 inches wide and is it kind of colored? Kind of a greenish color?
Yeah.
Okay. I would have a contractor take a look at that. And they'll determine whether it's asbestos or not, and the case is there. You know, you want to get with Department of Health, the Iowa Department of Health, go to their site and their website and ask them about asbestos siding, because kind of how if you hire it done, if you hire somebody to remove that, they have to follow a very stringent set of rules on taking it off, dust control, and taking it to the landfill. If you're doing it yourself, sometimes there's different rules.
Okay.
But you still, when you work with that, never work with it when it's dry. You want to keep it damp. Because
because of the dust that's involved is the...
Yeah, what the term they'll use is they'll say when it's friable, which means that when it's dust, then you intake that dust particles into your lungs and your respiratory system. So make sure that it's damp. Whenever you're around that, even messing around with that, just make sure that it's damp.
Okay. Can the stuff be sided over versus taking it off, or is that a big risk, or do I just check with the Department of Health?
Well, it can be, and some have gone to that point, but usually it's best to take it off. But go to the Department of Health and do some research on asbestos siding removal. Just type that in as a search.
Okay.
And there's a tremendous amount, and the EPA has some really good information on it.
All right, okay. Brian, thank you so much for your call.
Yep, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Every community seems like they have different types of that old asbestos, and we can go through town and see that's asbestos once you get used to working around.
Once you know whoever the contractor was that was putting that
pretty
on people's
much,
houses.
Pretty much, yeah. Where was the buy?
Carrie sent us an email from Tama County. She said, instead of concrete, can you put a concrete paver floor down for a machine shed that would hold a vehicle's weight? Is there something else that would work for a do-it-yourselfer?
Oh, no, you can. It just depends on the prep. You know, when you see these old city streets, especially, you know, the years and years and years, the heavy traffic semis were going down these streets. And what do they do every once in a while? Okay, if they had some super heavy vehicle go in, and instead of cracking the concrete floor, okay, well, I got to lift that brick up, throw a little sand underneath it. But it's the prep. And so what you usually do is like six, usually 4 to 6 inches of gravel, rock underneath, and then like say an inch or inch and a half of sand. But it depends on the loads. And so there's AIA, American Institute of Architects, and I think I've got that one right. But there's a lot of manuals out there on heavy loads, and there's a lot of drawings that are available, especially on the internet, on the type of load, especially for driveways. So you'd want to treat it like just like a driveway, because when you design a driveway, you're always going to have that maybe the garbage truck coming in, or some, you know, a delivery truck, something that's very, very heavy. But if you're just going to have cars and vehicles, you know, that you know, like a 4 to 6 inches of gravel and then rock, but it all has to be compacted and leveled. It's all in the prep work. Laying the bricks is the easy part. It's getting everything good underneath it. And there again, I really like the looks of that. And you see all these communities now going, what do they do in their walkways across all their brand new streets? They're throwing in pavers. If it's going to be real heavy, sometimes they'll throw asphalt or concrete underneath that as a base to carry the weight. But most of the time, it's gravel and sand.
Well, it sounds like you actually think this is a better idea because you don't have the freeze-thaw problem where it's cracking like all over the place.
And I like the look. I mean, okay. I really like the look. And if you ever want to change anything, you want to run a wire or a plumbing line, you know, lift up some bricks.
All right.
It's cooler looking.
Bill McAnally, home improvement and energy efficiency expert, is here today to answer your questions. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Bill McAnally is here with us today, our home improvement and energy efficiency expert, ready to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Oh. And we have yes,
okay,
Bill?
Before we go any farther, I like brick, but concrete's great, though, too. All my friends in concrete, they're thinking, all right, Bill, I'm going to meet you at the end of your driveway today when you get home.
With a concrete surprise?
Yeah, with a concrete. Yeah. My new shoes. No, but, you know, in some cases, especially in her case, they want to do it themselves. You know, the pavers are great, but, you know, everything that I have is concrete except my driveways. But anyway.
All right.
Can I pull my shoe out of my mouth?
We've got an email here from Ken in Davenport. He says, we have a 1920s era home with an open hearth fireplace. The last chimney inspection revealed that the clay flue is deteriorated right near the roof line. The chimney cap is in very poor shape and is allowing water to come in during storms. Replacing the bad flue sections would require deconstructing the chimney to the roof line and still would be challenging and expensive. A few contractors have proposed installing a stainless steel liner, but only if a fireplace insert is installed at the same time. The hearth is rather shallow and wouldn't accept a standard insert, and we like the open hearth for occasional use. Another contractor feels that liners are not reliable. What are your thoughts on that, Bill?
You know, I kind of go back. I really don't like having that old brick maintenance issue, because even if you fix it this year, next year is probably going to have some issues. You know, what I would do is I would rather than having a wood is go with a sealed combustion gas. I mean, you don't have that all that fumes coming at you that smells good, you know, the wood and the sparks coming out, burning holes in your carpet and all those kind of issues. But go with a sealed combustion direct vent gas, or go with an electric. If you're using it occasionally, you know, people are laughing, thinking, oh, geez, yeah, great. It's a little aluminum foil with some lights behind it, making it look like it's a real flame on those electric ones. But, you know, if you're using it occasionally, you may want to look at that. But as far as maintenance, you know, I just don't like having that constant maintenance high up in the air, having roof leaks, having water come down along the brick. You know, you can put a porcelain liner in. There's companies that will put that. The stainless steel, my gosh, that's going to, by the time you run two stories with stainless steel pipe, you can probably buy that gas direct vent fireplace. And if for resale, you may want to get, you know, think about that as well, because I think it would really ultimately be better to sell an insert in there, you know, with like a gas insert than it would a regular wood.
I can just feel Ken thinking, no way.
I know. And I mean, I like wood burners. I like cutting wood, and I had an old Vermont Castings wood burner, but they're terribly inefficient. If he wants that feel, that's okay. But, you know, you're still going to be fighting all that brickwork, and you can still go ahead and fix that top, but still brick is very porous. And I was just talking with a guy last week that he has moisture on the second level of this old house. The moisture's coming up, you know, through capillary action to the old brick. It's coming up two stories, and the brick's still wet in the second floor. And it's not from the top because it's already been cut off at the roof line.
We actually have the same problem at our house.
Yeah, and so you can do whatever you want. You're just fighting the outside elements there. Well, that old soft brick's going to wick that moisture right on up. So, I mean, that's my recommendation. But I do like the open fire.
So maybe your recommendation is take that, make that change, and build a fire pit in the backyard.
There you go. Right. If it's.
You're not a romantic, though.
Yeah, you can always bring that little one they sell. You know, you bring it inside to put it in your living room, I suppose.
I don't think that's recommended. You're giving a lot of great advice today, Bill.
You've got it. All you've right. got it on the wall, or you've got it right in front. Come on, work with me.
No, Tom is on the line from Bettendorf. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hi. Morning. What's your question today?
I'm going to get you back to concrete, Bill.
Okay.
I have a plain patio, concrete patio, that needs to be resurfaced, and I was wondering if there are any other options besides brick or paving. That's my question.
Well, you can. Is it pitted real bad or cracked?
What?
Is it have a lot of pits in it, or is it cracked? Or
There's some cracking. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so
not too bad. You can still walk on it, but I think it's an aesthetic thing. It's the wife's idea, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh yeah, but I can't say that because I think my wife's listening. So it's all your idea.
Right.
You know what you can do is there are some good adhesive type concrete levelers that you can put on the top to put a new surface.
Uh-huh.
But you know. It, what's really kind of neat right now, what a lot of guys are putting out, is they're grinding that concrete down, kind of give it more of a polished look. It kind of looks almost like terrazzo.
Oh.
And the price is coming down on that. So some of the commercial concrete contractors, they can come out and they can grind that surface down and make a level again.
Oh.
And then you can seal it.
And so that's an option that might make sense.
You know, that looks really cool because then you see all the aggregate on there. And, you know, hopefully it's not going to freeze thaw, you know, move up and down a whole lot. But, you know, that's an option. Of course, then you go back to, okay, I can put brick on it, or I can put a thin wood over the top, you know, like a decking over the top. That's sometimes that's a quick one. But I really like the looks of that ground concrete because then you can stain it. You can get that kind of mottled, kind of brownish acid. You can have an acid stain. Oh, man. I mean, that's kind of where concrete's going right now is the decorative. And it's really neat looking.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That sounds an interesting notion.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom.
I saw a floor done with that, with the acid etching. Mm-hmm. And by the time they got done sealing it, you swear that finish was like 6 inches thick. It's just how your eye perceived it.
Uh-huh.
And the acid stained it a kind of a brown. And, oh, my gosh, I mean, it was the best-looking floor. I was actually on my hands and knees trying to get my eye down there to see how much finish was there. You know, I said, there's got to be at least a couple inches. But there wasn't. It's just, you know, person who knows how to do it right. I could about tell you what it looked like if I got it done. It looked like somebody's gravel road probably. But that was beautiful, what they did with it.
Sounds like it'd be a little chilly on the toes.
Yeah, it could be. That's why you wear shoes.
I guess so.
And to stomp out the fire in front of your fireplace.
So we did talk early in the show about winterizing things like your deck, like
sure.
your driveway, like your patio. What do you need to do? What do you need to think about as we're going into the freeze and thaw season?
It's kind of neat how we get right back into that pressure washer. Your concrete around your house, we don't talk about it a whole lot, but like, say, your sidewalks and your driveway, you know, there's probably a lot of cracks. So what you want to do is you want to, and this is a case where you really want to get out there and use a pressure washer and spray and really clean that concrete and really, really clean those cracks out and then caulk those cracks. You know, it's funny how we'll caulk around windows and siding and all this on a vertical surface of a house. But then we go out the driveway and here's all these cracks. Well, where does the water go? When it rains, it goes down in the cracks and then it freezes and then it, you know, blows the cracks bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally, you have to replace them. So clean the cracks out and either, you know, and either apply a concrete grade caulking. And that's what you specifically want to look for, is a caulking that's made for cracks or expansion joints in concrete. If the cracks are very small, what you can do is chisel them and open them up a little bit more. And, I mean, that sounds kind of counteractive, but it really isn't. What you want to be able to do is get that caulking down into that crack. You just don't want to do a little pretty cosmetic line over the top. You want to get it down in there so it adheres to the sides of that crack. And so when the concrete expands and contracts, the concrete will stick to it. And that's why it has to be clean, because if it isn't really clean, that caulk will just adhere to the dust and then you'll end up peeling it out next year. But that's going to save you years of not having to replace that driveway and sidewalk. And I'm as guilty as anybody. And I mean, I keep saying, oh, I got to get out there and I've got to do it. You know, when you look at commercial construction, that's, you know, caulking all those cut joints and all those seams, that's part of the contract. But yet when we do it on houses or ourselves, we think, oh, well, we cut this, you know, relief joint or expansion joint in the concrete to let it move, and we just leave it alone. I've never understood why we don't take commercial, architecturally designed commercial methods and take them over to residential. And you know, because commercial's made to last a long time. And that's it. It just takes a little bit more to go ahead and caulk those and take care of them.
All right. When you say cosmetic caulk, I don't think any caulk I've ever put on anything was really a cosmetic attractive
Depends how wide your thumb is when you're spreading it around.
All right. I need to work on that. Jason is on the line from Waterloo. Hello, Jason.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. What's your question?
Speaking of caulk, we just had our bathroom redone by a contractor, and he did a beautiful job tiling around the tub with stone and all this, and it was, you know, big 13 by 13 tile. Beautiful job. And when he we got a new tub in there, too. And so at the point where the tub meets the tile, he put in grout, not caulk.
Okay.
And, you know, I thought that was weird at first, and he said, no, it'll be fine. But my feeling is, I know the floor flexes because it's an old house, okay, and I know that it's a fiberglass tub, so that's going to flex.
Yeah.
And grout is not a flexible medium, and caulk is. And I've watched a million hours of home improvement shows. I've never seen anyone put grout at that joint.
Yeah.
And so, okay, it was done 2 weeks ago. First crack appeared the other day. So now what do I do?
take the grout out. You know, I can see where I've seen people do that exact same thing, but they were usually on a cast iron.
That was exactly my thought too. I mean, we originally thought cast iron tub, and then we couldn't get one in the right dimensions without special ordering and all that. It was going to be super expensive, so that's why we went fiberglass.
Okay.
So yeah. I call him back for, or, you know,
yeah,
or what?
I would just say, hey, you know, I'm just not happy with this. Can we go ahead and change this out? And if, you know, if he doesn't want to come back, you know, the nice thing is that caulking, if you take it out very carefully, it's still, you know, it's still brittle enough, but that it'll probably pop out of there. But I hope that's the bad case, is that sometimes if that's in there and it was put in pretty hard, you know, shoved all the way back in there, hopefully it's not going to snap the edge of your tile off.
Yeah.
And you may have to
go 13 by 13 tiles, so if they do,
yeah,
it's a big go.
Well, you may have to take a Dremel okay tool, you know, and grind that out.
And you know, looking around it, he also did the same thing around the faucet and around the handle and around the shower head, you know, where that comes out of the wall too. And all those are subject to my kids pulling on it and everything.
Ooh,
so,
okay,
you know,
sure.
I can foresee problems there. So, you know, like you said, maybe my best bet is to see if he'll redo it. And, you know,
and
that way, if the tile snaps, it's you know, on him or what. You know?
And you can, and wherever you got your you know, the supplies for that, whatever the color of the grout is, you can have caulking custom colored to match that, and nobody's ever going to see it. So you're not stuck with either white or bronze or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
That's might what you have to be.
All right. Well, I appreciate your advice on that.
Sure.
I just kind of wanted to just confirm what my suspicions were and what, you know, what was really going on. But, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
You bet. Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jason. Next up, we've got Jim in Okoboji. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, first, Bill, we'd like to know when you're going to get up here and winterize your cottage.
Jim, how are you? Oh, here we go. This is scary. I'm not going to say your last name on here, but... And I got your invitation to the free meal, too. Thanks.
All right.
What's up?
We hope you'll be there. Well, I thought since you're talking about weatherization, you might give us some, give the folks up here some hints for the summer houses, summer cottages. And we have, you know, every spring thousands of dollars of damage to places here because they weren't properly winterized. And, you know, people try to decide whether to save some money on heating their unoccupied cottages. So give us your best shot.
You know what? Here's a case where this fellow Jim has had more experience than I do. So, you know, what do you use? What do you see up there?
Jim, are you hoping to get a message to your neighbors? Is that what this is all about?
What do you see him mostly doing wrong? Because I have some relatives that have a house up there, and I don't want them to do the same thing. what's been going on up there?
Well, usually it's a problem with either people are not heating their cottages or houses, though they, you know, they drain the water, which, you know, some people don't want to drain it because they want to come up for, you know, a day or two in the wintertime.
Sure.
And then, you know, the new high-efficiency furnace will get, the vent will get plugged up and the place goes down and
right.
Water and everything.
You know, how many of them have usually the people around those lakes are, they're not low middle class, so they could probably afford the small, you know, remotely monitored environmental, you know, either a temperature sensor or water sensor that they can remotely access. Is that something that maybe they should be looking at?
That's a good idea, and it's, you know, they have relatively inexpensive little thermostats that'll call you on your cell phone when the temperature drops below a certain level.
Sure, so that's something everybody could use around Iowa if they're not in those houses or on their vacation.
Exactly, yeah.
Plenty
of snowbirds in Iowa, so this isn't just an Okoboji problem.
That's right.
So, and when are you going to get up there and take care of your business there, Bill?
Yeah, in fact,
I think that was Jim's original
question.
I need to
get up there with him anyway. And have you picked up Jim has a reuse store south of Spirit Lake. Any more any good windows in there for me that you can tell?
I am thick with windows this week, so come on up.
Okay.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much for your call. And as we leave today, I have one more email question for you. Our home is 16 years old. It has the Masonite siding that is involved in the class action lawsuit. I don't know about that, but we'll probably be moving in 5 to 7 years. The siding needs to be painted and will probably need to be painted a second time before we move. Should we replace this siding with new or just replace the boards that are damaged? There are several.
Ooh, and I know what that looks like. It's all puffy on that bottom 1 inch or so. If you're going to sell it, I would get with your realtor and find out. First get an estimate of what it's going to take to re-site it. Then go to your realtor and find out, am I going to get that money back? You know, this is where it's going to come down. Are you going to fix it or is the next person going to fix it? So, and it, you know, if I was buying your house, I'd have that in my purchase offer anyway. So I would get a realtor first involved in that, find out if it's going to be worth your money.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of your calls and your emails today. Bill McAnally, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you.
Home improvement expert Bill McAnally comes by once a month to answer your questions. Talk of Iowa was produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are on our website, iowapublicradio.org. And Iowa Public Radio is now on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, look for Iowa Public Radio, like the page, and we'll keep you up to date on what's going on the air and behind the scenes. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.